The Black Talk Radio Network is made possible in part with help from the Black Talk Media Project, a North Carolina-based nonprofit engaged in the production and distribution of independent digital black media. Find out more by going to blacktalkradionetwork.com or blacktalkmediaproject.org and look for the menu tab, Crowdfunding Black Media. Black Talk Media Project, helping to provide you with new black media for the new millennium. The views and opinions expressed by hosts, invited speakers, and callers do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of the Black Talk Media Project or the Black Talk Radio Network.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, brothers and sisters. This is Onaji Muweed. You're listening to this station, Black Talk Radio. I'm the host tonight for Race Treaty. And tonight is a very, very special program for so many different reasons. I'm in New York City at the Ford Foundation on 42nd Street. Very close to the United Nations. And I'm going to talk to you tonight with our guests about what happened here in New York City this very special day when racism, oppression, sexism was confronted straightforward. And I'm going to start by sharing with you my particular reason for this, my input in today's program. Excuse me. Sir, if you can lower your voice, it'll be appreciated just a little bit. Oh, okay. So we're in a public place, so we're having some voices in the background. So I'd ask you to bear with us.
No worries, Brother Onaje. We can barely hear them. We hear you loud and clear, so don't worry about the background noise. I'll let you know.
Okay, the title of this, I'm going to save the title of this piece until I finish. In September 1996, my daughter committed suicide. She had been raped twice in her life. This is the first written acknowledgement and now the first public announcement of her tragic, traumatic life, and as such is a public statement of advocacy for Taisha and her sisters, aunts, cousins, nieces, friends, and other women who have experienced this wicked oppression. I tell my story with the hope of igniting a fierce anti-rape activism movement that will successfully halt the strewing of bodies, minds, and souls in the wake of sexual violence. I am not an objective observer of rape of Black girls, nor do I use an analytical social science research methodology in this discussion. But in fact, I strongly affirm and adapt an evaluative critical method that contains prescription. Like researchers Elizabeth Senko and Susan Hippensteel, who speak to the correctness of emotionality and activism as research, I bring who I am and what I experience in my work to inform it and to present my social narrative as evidence and ongoing struggles for social change. I am emphatically against rape of all kinds. Therefore, this inquiry is intended to be a contribution towards the alleviation of human suffering and oppression of all kinds, especially the sexual oppression of women and young girls. black women and young black girls. The backdrop for this paper is a form of research guided in community and culture that leads me into another realm and level of understanding internalized oppression. The raping of young girls in the black community is a problem, both historically and currently, of enormous, complicated political, moral, and social proportion that defies any single explanation, and yet it demands an explanation. Sexual tyranny is not committed because of who individual women are or what they do, but because of institutionalization, systems of male inadequacy, insecurity, power, spiritual underdevelopment, and moral bankruptcy and lawlessness. Historical trauma theory and post-traumatic slave syndrome suggests that a connection exists between cultural and historical experiences of trauma, inflictions of sexual violence on young black girls, and the presence of social culturally adaptive mechanisms acquired as a result of sustained psychological multi-generational trauma. In order to find where personal and historical trauma intersect, I will examine my own tragedy in a larger context of violence and oppression. That is an article entitled The Rape of Black Girls that was in a book, The Recentering Culture and Knowledge and Conflict Resolution Practice, edited by Mary Adams Trujillo, S.Y. Bowen, Linda James Myers, Philip Riches, and Beth Ray. So this discussion is about the rape of black girls and black women. And today's program was sponsored by the Black Women's Truth and Reconciliation Commission, April 28th to May the 1st, with the principles of truth, justice, healing, and reconciliation. It's sponsored by the Black Women's Blueprint Organization. And I have with me my guest, Sister Vanessa Green, and she's a board member of this organization. So I want to welcome you. Thank you so much for the work that you are doing, the work that your organization is doing, and for your agreement to be on the program tonight. Sister Vanessa, please tell us a little bit about yourself. How did you get involved with this organization, and what is the purpose of this commission?
Thank you for having me. I followed Black Women's Blueprint. I've seen the mother tongue. They actually will do mother tongue dialogue around Black History Month. And I've seen mother tongue dialogue for a few, about four times. And it's affirming, uplifting, and it makes Black women feel affirmed, loved, and beautiful. So I got involved with them. They actually asked me to join the board because I started writing my story of what happened to me on a blog with their organization. And then they asked me would I be a board member in November of 15 of this year. Black Women's Blueprint was founded in 2008. The Truth and Reconciliation Commission actually launched in 2010. So it took 6 years to begin this beautiful thing that you actually saw today at the UN, and actually we heard the women's story yesterday at Riverside Church, a place where where people have a tribunal to tell their stories. This is the first one in the United States ever, similar to apartheid, when apartheid ended in South Africa. And so this is the first one in the United States, and it's where African American women could tell their stories, and we are asking for what does United States owe black women for the rape, terrorism, violence that they have suffered. And that's basically what this Truth and Justice Commission is about.
As a witness to today's events, or some of today's events, and I wasn't there yesterday, but I was at the public rally, public testimony and commission that was held on 47th Street and 2nd Avenue. It was one of the most tremendous events I've attended in my life, because you're talking about a part of a population that is usually demoralized, marginalized, oppressed, and silenced. Silenced in their own life and silenced by death. So for these courageous women to speak up and tell their stories in public like that is an act of extreme courage. And I can think of also Harriet Tubman, who not only freed herself from slavery, but went back to the South 19 times in the face of threats, in the face of being on wanted posters, against the threat of being tortured and also hurting her family as well. So these three women that spoke and gave their personal testimony today was truly a fierce and heroic act. And I say this is the day that Black women liberated me. And I say that because when we look at our slavery past, the men were meant to stay in their place. Or as a people, we were meant to stay in our place. But through terror and through force and through violence, they made it so that a white man could come in and rape a woman, and it could be someone's wife, rape someone's daughter or sister or aunt. And in any way the man wanted to respond was always met with a fierce resistance, because rape was used as a political tool to terrorize and to control. So that man would either be castrated, he would be hung, he would be sent off. It was something was going to happen to him. Or he would be made to watch what would have to happen to the same woman he's trying to protect. So the women, in defense of the men, would say, don't say anything. You know, it'll be all right, because we'll get through this. So the man had to swallow his pride. The woman had to swallow her respect for the man. And this has been going on for centuries. Mm-hmm. This has been going on for so long that it is still true today, that for every rape that a Black woman will report, at least 15 goes unreported. In fact, those numbers are probably even lower than that. It's probably higher than that. So men, Black men today, be it the father of the daughters being raped, being the husband of the wife who got raped, or being the uncle of a niece, whatever the relationship is between that man and that Black woman or that Black girl who got raped, he is silent. The word rape in our community is not even mentioned, let alone discussed, analyzed, or fought against. So for these Black women to come together and create this event and create this commission, Black women have liberated me today so that I can speak to this issue on this call tonight and continue to fulfill my commitment to my daughter who was raped, and to continue my activism in that way. So Sister Green, please tell us more about what is it that happened today at the United Nations, and what happened at 47th Street, and also what happened at the Ford Foundation.
United Nations, that was bureaucracy at its best. It was a big fight. We had a program, and the United Nations actually dictated. They basically felt that there was a lot of controversy on what was going to be said. They actually dictated our narrative and gave us different amounts of time. Who could talk? This person can't talk. They're not famous enough. This person, Janet Mock was there, of course, who we all know and love. And it was like, well, we don't want her to be a keynote. We don't want Alicia Garza to talk, because Alicia Garza is the co-founder of Black Lives Matter, as we all know. She's going to talk about reparations. So we actually were like, what do we do? Because we knew that United Nations is a place where we need to have this dialogue, because the United Nations has a good language about race. So we had to go back and forth. Federica, who is the... I think she's the assistant executive director of Black Women's Blueprint. You know, I always get the titles wrong. And she had to go back and forth on the phone with people till 3 o'clock in the morning about what kind of narrative is going to be said. We held it there because we thought it was important, but they limited our seats. So we had a lot of our folks who did not get into the room. And then, you know, Sarah made her statement, and her statement basically did say that, you know, we were held hostage there, but we did it. And we actually took the space back. We reclaimed that space. And then the tribunal that took place on 47th Street was about Black women actually telling their stories and then making those folks who had never been held accountable for the crimes that committed, we actually were able to tell the stories of women who had gone, who had passed, who we knew about, and actually tell, give, make our admission of guilt to those people who were, who had done, to the harm doers. So this was a tribunal. Today was tribunal day, and today was the day for us to say that we wanted to name those who were perpetrators and who have perpetrated against us and make acknowledgement for those who have suffered. And so we this was a day of almost go through the process of healing. So today was a very important day. You know, we wanted, that's just more of what we wanted. We wanted the United Nations to know that today was a day of healing for us. You might dictate the narrative, but we were going to push through that narrative and make it our own. And we actually took that room back. It was funny to see their faces go, oh, they're not really saying what we told them to say. And we kind of like were saying, no, we are saying no more. And we actually, it was actually funny and funny at the time to see, you know, the man, the one man on the stage go, ooh, that's not what we said. And it was like, no, we're, and it was great. That piece I really loved. I was like, yay. So it was actually awesome.
For those who know, who may not know, this is what is called the Decade of African People from 2015 to 2024. And I love this button. I wasn't at the program yesterday when they were giving out, but the organizers were nice enough to find one and give me one that says, decolonize the decade. So they are, you know, not just making buttons about it. They are actually doing it. They're taking space back, taking public narrative back, you know, and saying, no, these are the words, these are the concepts. Mm-hmm. There are four basic principles that are used as a mandate. The Black Women's Truth and Reconciliation Commission, four mandates are truth, unearth the truth of survivors by providing a platform for speaking and sharing their narratives, justice, strengthen our voices and capacity as women of African descent to develop and set our own standards of social and economic justice, as well as advocate for state and systematic reform and the promotion of human rights. Healing, create safe spaces and fill the gap for culturally relevant programs for survivors of sexual violence to be able to recover, engage in strategies for healing, as well as spaces for activism. And lastly, reconciliation. Partner with Black men whom are calling themselves emerging sons to promote intra-community reconciliation and public deliberations using a human rights framework to center gender and sexuality and racial justice organizing. Mm-hmm. So you spoke about the United Nations. And you spoke about the public tribunal. Mm-hmm. I think it was, 13 select cases, yeah, that you chose, 13 cases. And then was the three at the end included in the 13, or that was the 13?
Those three, no, those are different. Those were three women who were telling their story, you know.
Okay,
yeah.
All right.
So actually 16.
16 altogether, all right. And what would you say were the response of the audience, of the people who were there in support of the commission?
Everybody's been, it's been the most moving, for you, you talk about you being liberated. For me, it's been the most liberating time of my life. And, you know, when I've been working with Farrah on this for a minute since I even joined, and it was, to me, the pushback from, even like when Brother Scotty said he had never even heard about it, media saying to us that it was not controversial enough and it was not important. And for all of us to try to process that the terror that Black women go through, horror that they go through, the brutalization, and just people to say it's not important, we were like, well, when is it going to be important? When will this ever be important?
Oh, you didn't get the memo?
No, we didn't get the memo.
Yeah, it said Black Lives Don't Matter.
We missed the memo.
You missed the memo? Okay.
We missed the memo. And to be told that by some of the larger papers, we were like, oh, okay. So it was a really, it's been heart-wrenching to me to hear that it's not controversial. Not
and how many, and Robin, the co-host of the show, Robert Benton, founder of the show, he shares these statistics with me. How many Black women are missing today?
Wasn't it, I'm not sure. They gave the statistics yesterday too, and I forgot, but it was in the thousands actually.
Yeah, indeed, I know that. So people can be kidnapped, tortured, terrorized, forced into, you know, a position of inferiority and subordination for centuries, and then still hear that a matter is not big enough. It's not newsworthy, like news. No, this is you know, the silence. And Martin Luther King said, you know, we must break the conspiracy of silence. And that's how people get controlled, by feeling that that they have to stay in their place. That's what oppression is. It's not somebody physically doing something to you. It's you accepting that position. So here we are at the Ford Foundation. So how did the Ford Foundation get involved with this? And what did you do here tonight at the Ford Foundation?
Ford Foundation was a reception, and they have been one of the sponsors who gave us space, and also was one of the sponsors to provide money, because it was a very, I'm the treasurer, of course, and I'm the treasurer for the Black Women's Blueprint.
Oh, I got the right one, folks.
It was a very expensive endeavor, because we had to fly in the women who told their stories, because they came from all over to tell their stories, to tell their truth, and to get food for people, to feed people, to keep people nourished, to get the space. We had to pay the UN. I was shocked and amazed.
I had to pay the UN.
Yes, we had to pay them.
Unbelievable.
Unbelievable. I felt the space.
Oh, so you thought freedom was free?
I thought the space was
free. You thought freedom was free. you thought the United Nations was free too.
I was like, that's a thing. And we paid them a lot of money.
Woo.
So we had to have people sponsoring the Ford Foundation is one of the sponsors. So and they gave us the space to hold the reception and et cetera. So
kudos
to the Ford Foundation.
Big ups, and, big ups.
Yeah. So that's how we came to be here and to do the reception. But I was just shocked that the UN found a lot of our dialogue very controversial, because I asked Farrah, well, what is their purpose then? And she just looked at me. I said, the purpose?
Obviously to keep you quiet.
Okay.
That's what it seems like
to
me.
I learned something new in this process about the UN.
So you had a few speakers here tonight. Look at the program. Let's see who it has down here. Speakers, Shawana Chapman Brown.
Yep, she's a co-chairperson on the board, and she's a co-chair. And let's see, Ida B. Wells' granddaughter spoke.
That's Michelle Duster.
Yes.
Okay.
And Dorothy Pittman, who was on the picture, that famous iconic picture with
Stein.
Who was in? Oh God, people will kill me for not knowing. Who was that famous feminist? People will kill me. Gloria Steinem.
Yeah.
And people always get her mixed up that Dorothy Pittman is somebody else, but it is Dorothy Pittman. Dorothy Pittman gave an amazing. I brought her book. I didn't realize this when she said that she had a store in Harlem that she paid $2,000 for rent. And when gentrification came, her rent went up to $21,000. That is why she no longer has a store in Harlem and had to move to Florida. Yeah, she told me that tonight. I was shocked about that. And she said she had to deal with sexism, racism, and violence because they wanted, after gentrification took over Harlem, she had to leave the store she loved. Yeah. She's a wonderful woman. Yeah.
So we are reminded again that everything happens in relationship to land.
Yes.
Try eating food from the air. This rain is good and we can drink it, but this won't fill our bellies. Yes. Everything is based upon land. Revolution is based upon land. Human rights is based upon land. Culture is based upon land. The way you live your life is based upon land. We need some land.
Yeah.
And we need to own and not just rent. And here you've heard another story of an icon in our movement who was forced off the land in Harlem, who she loved. And I grew up in Harlem, so of course that's also a front to me as well. Who else did we have speaking tonight?
And Lynn. It was Lynn, and I don't know Lynn's last name. I'm terrible people's name.
In the bottom.
Lynn Rosenthal, who was a commissioner of Black Women's Movement. What we did is we gathered commissioners to help with, to make sure that we took care of everything. We wanted to make sure that we didn't offend anybody and forget anybody. We had to make sure we had healers in the room. We had to make sure that we had, if we had people who did not hear, we had interpreters in the room. We had people who, Black women who speak Spanish. We had Spanish speaking interpreters in the room. So the commission was to make sure that every piece was taken care of. So we had to make sure that we had people who make sure that we weren't offending our trans community. So the commission was that. We would have telephone conferences. And I was on those Monday morning ones in the morning where we would all get together with the commission to make sure everything was taken care of. So that's what, and Lynn Rosenthal, who was on the commission, she spoke tonight too. And what she said was amazing. And she actually talked about reparations and acknowledging the rape of Black women.
So, okay, folks, you heard it live and direct. Here it is. And you did hear that last name. It started Rosenthal.
Yeah.
Said that, yes, we need to be concerned about rape and having the victims of rape repaired, but we must place it in the larger context of oppression and the need for reparations,
yes,
human rights. And this is the first time I've met this person. I didn't know anything about her, but I'm in love with her already.
Yep.
For this woman to come to this event in this position and bring that forward, when many of our own people wouldn't have brought it forward, it's like, come on. So I was quite inspired and surprised by her comments. And that's what this is about. It's about our people's right to heal. First of all, when there's a crime, that means there's a criminal. And that means if there's a crime and a criminal, there is a victim, and that means there's a harm. And if there's a harm, it needs to be addressed. And to be addressed is called reparations. And that's what, in fact, that's what it's all about. And we know that we can't understand or we can't make the claim for reparations until we, in fact, lay out the facts and a strong stream of that fact, collection and pronouncement is the raping of Black women from the time we came here off, you know, from off the boats until now. So this is certainly contributing to that conversation. And then also we had Attorney Benjamin Crump,
yes,
president of the National Bar Association, and he brought with him a sister from
Oklahoma, one of the survivors.
One of the survivors who was the victim of this white cop who raped
Daniel Holzclaw.
Okay, and he raped
13
women.
They called the Oklahoma 13, right?
And it was able, he got 37 years, consecutive years?
Oh,
263 years. So, of course, that's what he deserved, and probably more than
probably
that.
Probably more.
But we can't divorce him from the system that produced him.
Yes.
So we're not going to allow him to be the problem. We're not talking about the theory of bad apples, where you have one or two bad apples. No, we're talking about a whole system of poison apples. So let's be clear. He got what he deserved, but that's not the answer. The answer is the system that produced him and the system that continues to produce people like him to think that I can do something to these Black women because they have no status, and who are they going to believe, me or you? So we're talking about human rights and being accepted as a human being, being recognized as a human being, and being treated as a human being, and having a system to put all those things in place. So the reception here at the Ford Foundation, the cheese was good, the conversation was good, and wine was good as well. I must say that. So we had a good time. And there was one sister who was on the dance floor who tore it up. I don't know who she was, but she just tore the thing up. Just tore it down. So we had a good time, people. So that's, you know, sharing with the audience. That's some of the things that happened today. But also, looking at the program, you were at the African Burial Grounds earlier this morning?
Yes.
Okay, an ancestral dedication of the Day of Justice recognition and healing at the African Burial Ground, 290 Broadway in New York City. Now, what was that about?
I didn't attend that because my foot was hurting. So somebody else attended that one, right, Jerome? But I didn't attend.
Did you attend?
Yes.
I'll come on over.
Oh my God.
Come on. We have another
Sister Geraldine.
This is Sister Geraldine?
Yep.
What's your last name?
Khalik.
Okay, and how were you involved with this
She went to Oklahoma.
Yeah, I was part of the Justice Ride for the OKC.
Oh, and now wait a minute. What's the Justice Ride? What's that?
Black Women's Blueprint will rally when women are usually hurt. They'll rally to go to different parts of the country to support Black women when they are raped. And the woman who was killed in, I think it was Pennsylvania, who was shot, when she said no, they did a bus ride there. So Oklahoma, they went down for the host law sentencing. And Geraldine went to that.
See, I didn't even know this part. So why did you decide to do that? Are you working, going to school?
Currently I'm working.
Okay.
And I volunteer.
And they let you up the plantation?
Just for a little bit.
Oh, just for a little bit. Did you have your pass?
No. I ran away.
You ran away? Oh, you were a runaway slave. You wouldn't have been a slave.
But yeah, so I decided to go because this is definitely something I'm very passionate about.
Mm-hmm.
I am a survivor, and I wanted to stand with the survivors of Hope Club as well.
Oh, wow. Thank you for sharing that with us. And what did you do on the trip? What did you do?
Well, we went there to stand in solidarity and support mm-hmm. of the survivors. We held a forum we participated in a forum to learn, to listen, to the members of the community. In any way that we can help, be of support to the survivors and to the community. But yeah, that was our intention.
So how did they receive you? When you told them that you were coming, what did they say?
Well,
it was mixed.
Mixed feelings.
Uh-huh. Mixing Kool-Aid and lemonade? What was the mix?
Well, the survivors were very welcoming.
Uh-huh.
Very welcoming to Black women to do certain things down there.
Okay.
And expressed as such while we were in the courtroom with them, in solidarity, holding space, there.
But what happens is I think other agencies get territorial.
Oh,
we have this. We got it under control. Why are you here?
Why are you here? You little troublemakers. Just go back to your own plantation. So, after you got to know them, you were working with them, what kind of relationships were created between you and the survivors?
For me personally?
Yeah, you and other people on the ride.
Well, we had a survivor here today.
Okay.
At the tribunal. For me, it was more of just being there in solidarity with them.
Mm-hmm.
And whether it was providing healing or praying or just our presence alone and show of support meant a lot. One of the mothers of the survivors really, really showed thanks that we were there and really, I think they really appreciated us being there and the presence and the support, not only from Black Women's Blueprint, but from everyone else who supported Black Women's Blueprint and being there in solidarity with the survivors. Yeah.
Sounds really phenomenal to have the interest and dedication and then, gather all those resources. How many people were on the trip?
Ooh. On the bus ride or all together?
Both.
A lot
of
different organizations from all over the United States.
In terms of your bus ride, your organization.
Ten or 12 of us.
And you had other people from other organizations
that
on the bus?
Down, yeah.
Yes, from all over the United States, from California, East Coast, West Coast.
Which
yeah.
the news didn't show, of course, because when you see it, the news never shows up.
So how many people came from other places, would you say?
Hundreds.
Yeah. Wow. So what was it like in the courtroom? Were you there for the whole trial or just the verdict?
We were there the day of sentencing.
Mm-hmm.
So the Thursday, the 21st of January, we were there. That was the day of sentencing. The vibe of the courtroom. So we were there early. We waited. The survivors waited a very long time. For court to even be come into session.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of lack of communication. We didn't know when court would resume. It seemed like a post-court lawyer was trying to have an attempt to try to throw a mistrial that morning. So it took court a long time to resume. We actually had to break for lunch. We did not, but court had to break for lunch. We waited in the hall until we can re-enter the courtroom. You could definitely see there was fear, there was concern, there was panic in a way of not knowing what was happening, not knowing what was going on. But in a very beautiful way, we reclaimed back that space for the purpose and the reason why we were there. We had a beautiful call and response.
In the courtroom?
In the courtroom.
Get out of here.
Yes. Well, outside the courtroom, but yes, within.
Within the courtroom?
Yes, within the facility.
Oh, what was the call and response?
We called on Yahweh.
You have a doula.
Yes. Savannah. She led the call and response, and we reclaimed back the space, and in a beautiful, beautiful way. And then shortly after, we were able to re-enter the courtroom, and court resumed. So it was very intense, because we did not know what was happening. I know that from looking and overseeing and just my observation, you know, it was a lot hearing the survivor impact statement was very difficult. One thing that the media did not cover was that a child was violated.
A child, what age?
Assaulted.
He was 17, the one he raped twice. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And, you know, the media labeled her as a woman.
Mm.
But she is a child.
She is a child.
She's very young. And that was definitely that was tough to look at.
Yeah. So for those who are turning into the radio show at this time, I'm Onaji Muweed, the host tonight. We're speaking to some courageous, visionary activists here in New York City who have created the Black Women's Truth and Reconciliation Commission. Headed up by the Black Women's Blueprint, and we have Vanessa Green, and we have a young sister. Her name is
Geraldine Colleagues.
So we are going over the purpose of the commission, the events that happened today, and we I had asked the question around about the African Burial Ground ceremony, and we were able to get some background how the sister has been a part of this movement. And what happened at the burial grounds this morning? So we're at the Ford Foundation in New York City on 42nd Street that was one of the sponsors, or at least sponsors of the reception and probably maybe contributed to that high rent bill at the United Nations as well, I would imagine. Mm-hmm.
So this morning we had the opportunity to honor our ancestors and also pay homage and respect to the founders of the African Burial Ground and to learn and hear and listen to how it came to. Ms. Verna Francis, one of the co-founders and founders of the African Burial Ground, and she gave a, she told her story of how it came to be, how they preserved the ground, fought to preserve the ground, fought to have the remains preserved and protected, uplifting our ancestors in that space. Was very powerful today. It was very, very powerful.
You know, interesting that how things kind of come together. I was on the phone this morning with a good friend of mine who was the anthropologist for the site, Cheryl the Roach, a good friend of mine. And when I tell her about how the burial ground was used today in the ceremony, she'll be very pleased to hear that. So it's interesting that you these two things are coming together. I am totally in awe of both of you, the organization, the work that you're doing, and I would think that the listening audience would want to know how would they get in touch with you.
They want more information. They can call info at Black Women's Blueprint, email info at blackwomensblueprint.org, or you can also go to the website where there's. There's still information up, www.blackwomensblueprint.org. Or you also can also contact Farrah Tanis if you want at ftanis@blueprintnewyork.org. And you can get more information on this agency. They are a struggling agency because nobody ever, and you need to know this, ever supports any kind of organization that does social justice movements or issues. So. Hope that you'll even come out. We have two more days of this, and we're going strong with it.
One of the handouts that was given to us was a red envelope, and on the front of it says, "Help us shoulder the cost of our own healing. Become a BWTRC sustainer." Yes, I will become a BWTRC sustainer with my tax-deductible monthly pledge. An amount of whatever that you would want that to be using a Visa, MasterCard, American Express, or Discover card. So you can email your name and that number and pertinent information, and you can charge it to your card. You can send a check, and whatever you do, send something. And what address can they send a check to?
Oh, 279 Empire Boulevard in Brooklyn, New York. 11202.
Say it one more time.
279 Empire Boulevard, Brooklyn, New York, 11202. And it just making attention to Black Women's Blueprint.
The Black Women's Truth and Reconciliation Commission is the first of its kind in the nation to focus on rape and sexual assault against Black women and certainly Black girls in the United States. The goal is a collective. Our goal is a collective memory and transformative justice that incorporates diverse points of view and an in-depth of personal and historical understanding. Along with Threshold Collaborative, we have been and will continue to gather the stories of women and girls of African descent before, during, and after the commission. Some of these stories can be heard now by connecting to the site soundcloud.com/threshold threshold-collaborative collaborative /sets/thisismystory. This is my story. In the middle of that is ISIS. How interesting. How very interesting. ISIS is right in the middle of that. ISIS is talking about the African goddess. If you would like to share your story on audio interview during the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, please text or call this number 201-956-4106. And we do our best to arrange that. If you would like to leave a written story, you can do so at the webpage https colon /2x www.surveymonkey, SURVEYMONKEY.com, /ARA/V as in victory, 868, R as in Roger, Z as in Zebra, and G as in Gerald. To upload an audio or video of your story, log on to myfreedomlounge.com. If for any reason you feel that you need support in the healing, please reach out to our healers by emailing them at counseling@blueprintny.org. So those are some of the contact numbers and ways that you can participate in this process, even though you're not here physically in New York. And they did say it's going to continue during and after. Mm-hmm. So this is not so much a starting point as it is a continuation of our people's movement for self-determination, and that includes indeed self-healing. So this is quite an undertaking. All the prayers, the time, the disappointments, the tenacity, all the things that you have to summon up to get to this point. How does it feel to really say this has been a success and we're only halfway through? How does it feel to see this successful and see the turnout of the people and hear the stories and seeing the healing that's taking place? How does it feel to witness all of this?
It really feels good to see it come finally to fruition, as we all say. I have to say, give a shout out to the staff, Farah and her staff and the commission. They did an awesome job. They worked hard for 6 years to get this, to make sure this. I went to some meetings before I was on the board, and to see these women really make this come to light. What we see in the future is that we would love to see, and their hope is that more men become involved, because we know, you know, the only way to end it is that we need to have men as allies, men understanding that we need to end this and violence against women with their help. So I'm so excited, and I keep saying, I don't know what I'm going to do when the 4 days is up. Like, what do you do? How you process it after it's done? I don't know. So go back to my regular life. But we know that this has to continue. We know this is not going to end. We have plans on what we're going to do after and what's going to happen. We're full from upstate, so we know that we're going to be doing some work upstate with our women upstate. So it's not over. Mm-hmm. It can't be over. We're going to continue.
And how are you feeling about this, young lady, about what you witnessed and participated in?
Well, for me, it's definitely helping part of my healing process. And it's also empowering. It's empowering to see this type of sisterhood come together. It's nothing that I can really describe, the amount of energy, love, and support that collectively I have seen and experienced myself during these past 2 days alone. And we have 2 more to go. So it has just been a wonderful experience. And we have uplifted one another, loved on one another, in the most beautiful way. So I can't wait for the next 2 days to continue.
Wonderful. So looking at the schedule of events, we see that Saturday, part one, Black Girls Speak on Black Girls' Rights through a Truth and Reconciliation Commission, Visioning Justice for Ourselves and Future Generations, which will be held at the UN Church Center, which is also here in the United in New York, 777 United Nations Plaza, number 8G, I guess that's the room number. We have a 9 o'clock opening, a performance with spoken word with mm-hmm. Impact Theater Company, which is co-founded by a good friend of mine, Jamal Joseph, and they're going to turn it out. Mm-hmm. They're going to turn the thing out. Spoken word artist, Alicia Harris, and then you go into different visioning workshops. Dorothy Pittman Hughes is going to be the speaker at 12, and some other things. So what do you expect to happen at this program tomorrow that's different from today, if at all?
We think that more that some, you know, we different people will come out to, you know, we also know that some people are still coming in because some people, because of work, could not make it to a lot of stuff that was going on yesterday and today. So we envision folks coming in and taking advantage of some of these different programs. You know, there's some in Brooklyn, there's some here in Manhattan. So we envision that people will actually come and take partake in a lot of this stuff. So we envision more stuff going on, more healing, more. We still say that you also, we've also told people you still can share your stories if you feel like it, because the healers will still be available. I am a healer. I was a healer at Riverside Church. So healers are always around. We're always around it. So people need to tell their story, because we want people to tell their story, because part of healing is to tell your story. So we think that it's going to be still a great weekend. And I think that it'll be, we'll see more of a larger crowd too.
Okay. So the concurrent events are taking place. I have knowledge of at least three of them. One is at Acts of Healing and Resistance, Black Women's Blueprint 279 in Empire Boulevard in Brooklyn. Healing circles for sustaining personal healing with a number of healers, addressing the interior and the intimate, healing as an imperative practice in practice. So we also see that at Harriet's Abercrombie and in Bold Rebirth will be holding space for healing. That's taking place. We know that Reckoning with Our Own Complicity, a workshop by white people, for white people. Oh, this is interesting. That I hope you have a whole lot of folks there. I want the numbers on that one. Don't be coming telling me that two people showed up either. So that's going to happen at Connect headquarters, 127 West 27th Street, 127th yeah. Street, between, it says 6 and 7. There's no 6 and 7th in Harlem. So that's Lenox Avenue. That's Lenox Avenue.
Well, they made their own.
Okay. 9:30, Reckoning with Our Own Complicity. Now we're talking. Okay, that's Sally McNichols. And they have a bunch of things happening there. And then also there's a Black Men.
Yes.
Black Men Speak. Oh, interesting. What would it take to end rape in Black communities? A multi-generational debate with Robert Corbett, the brother of Racy Taylor, and this is at the Twins Barbershop, 74A 4th Avenue in Brooklyn. Brothers, hey, that's where you want to be tomorrow. Let me give you that address again. It's Twins Barbershop, 74A 4th Avenue in Brooklyn, New York, 11217. And I guess it doesn't show the time here. 12:30 to 3:30, Reckoning with Our Trauma While Confronting Our Complicity as Black Men. Quentin Wilcock, a good friend of mine also from Connect, and other folks are going to be on that panel as well. So that's Saturday, and then even it's still in the middle because you have Sunday. Mm-hmm. Sunday is Visioning, Healing, and Reconciliation Through Restorative Justice and Liberation at the National Black Theater in Harlem. That address is 2031 Fifth Avenue in Harlem, New York, 10035. 10 a.m., the power at the margins, sustaining transformation at policy, community, and individual levels post the commission. And the keynote will be Monica Johnson-Hoster, okay, Executive Director, North Carolina Commission Against Sexual Assault, mm-hmm. and the National Alliance to End Sexual Violence, and a number of speakers will be there as well. And then at 12 o'clock, Truth and Racial Healing and Transformation Enterprise, keynote, Gail Christopher, Vice President for Policy and Senior Advisor of the W.K. Kellogg Foundation. Wow. Okay, you got the Kellogg's folks coming out.
Yeah.
You like cornflakes? So we're going to make sure we eat our cornflakes so they can keep on supporting these very needed events. So we're coming to a close almost. We have another 5 minutes. This is truly historical. You've liberated me today. by giving me voice to have this program. I mean, if you hadn't done this program, I wouldn't be speaking on it. Right. So you liberated me just in terms of today right here and the continuation of my life. So anything that we've left out, anything that you'd want the listening audience to know, and certainly give them a number and an email address so they can contact you again as well.
Don't forget, it's info@blackwomanblueprint.org. And
so those in the audience who want them to come out and support you in any kind of violence that's happened to Black women, you can call them and they'll send their caravan out to see whatever they can do. And also, there was a call to start chapters. So you don't have to wait for an incident to happen, because the truth of the matter is, incidents have already happened. We're trying to dig up the bodies and the bones and saying, you know, our people need to be properly buried. And the stories and the tragedies and the traumas that our women and children have suffered, those stories need to be also exhumed and properly put to rest. And that means first exposing them and letting them and saying what the truth of the matter is. This is the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. So we have to discover the truth. We have to tell the truth. We have to affirm the truth. And remember those four principles: truth, justice, healing, and reconciliation. What other numbers you'd like to leave with us?
If they need to reach me, then call me at 8. They can reach me at, text me at 845-241-0349.
Yes. What else would you like to say to young people, to young women and young to our young generation? What do you want to say to them?
It's never too late to start your healing process, and it's never too late to speak your truth.
Well, you've heard it. This is Onaji Muweed from Ford Foundation in New York City, witnessing a phenomenal event today. These courageous Black women from all across the country coming together. Years, I think you said 7 or 8 years in the making. And of course, even long before that, because they are, in fact, an answer to our ancestors' prayers. They are manifesting the calls of our ancestors to tell the truth. And in telling the truth, to put forth the case for reparations and be a part of the healing. So we'd like to thank the audience for listening to this call. We ask you to have all your friends come and listen to the archive of this program so they can get those numbers and can participate, and have the sisters organization, the Blueprint, come to your city to set up chapters so we can continue this work, a part of our healing. And I say to people, what I am healing, you are healing, we are healing, our people are healing. Ashe, ashe, ashe.
Ashe.
Mercy, mercy me. All things ain't what they used to be now. Where did all the blue skies go? Poison is the air that blows from the north and south.